Our first speaker, which is the person that was responsible for this event every year, I'd like to go ahead and welcome Bruce W. up to the podium.
I'm Bruce, I'm an alcoholic. Oh, this is different. I really do want to say thank you to the volunteers, because you're the ones that really put this together. So, my sobriety date is May 15th, 1982, and the first birthday meeting that I went to, one of our members was celebrating 5 years, and I thought she was lying. Because how could anybody get 5 years? I mean, just how could anybody, you know, I was struggling to keep, you know, at that time probably 4 or 5 months. How could anybody do, it was like beyond my imagination. And fortunately, you know, I started, you know, I came out of H&I, and I wasn't the one taking H&I. It was being brought to me. So, I was living in a gated community, so. But this guy named Neil W. was coming up there, and we kind of ran in different groups together, you know. I mean, I knew everybody in his circle, and he knew everybody in mine, and we were all the same, kind of. And so, you know, after I got about knew enough about the program to know that I needed a sponsor, I asked Neil to sponsor me, and he was my sponsor for the first 5 years of my sobriety. And then Neil had to go, you know, and. But Neil taught me some things. You know, Neil taught me, you know, easy does it, but do it. And in fact, I remember him telling me that he knew when he first started sponsoring me that he couldn't push me too hard because he was afraid I would bolt. And I would have, I needed to go at my own speed. And, and when Neil left, I got Ron H. as a sponsor, and Ron was a good sponsor, and Ron kind of taught me that, you know, I didn't have to get freaked out over every major occurrence, you know, that I wasn't going to die over everything, and then Ron got cancer, you know, and so after Ron left us, I got Jack in, and Jack took me back through the steps. I'd gone through the steps with Neil, but Jack took me back through the steps, and at that time I think I had about 8 years sober, and that was really the, you know, one of the first times that I really faced some of my deeper character defects. And then Jack moved out of town, and I got Dennis B. And I had Dennis B. for a sponsor for quite a long time. And it was kind of a period in my life that, you know, I was very busy with work and with family and stuff. Things were going okay. You know, and then Dennis got cancer. You know, so after Dennis left us, I got my friend Father Bernie to be my sponsor. And, you know, I used to take my problems to Bernie, and he told me one thing that's stuck in my mind ever since. And I was complaining to him about something, was, you know, the world was going to end or something. And he looked at me and he said, he had this big desk in his office, you know, and he would sit there and he said, "Bruce, don't die until you've been shot." And, you know, I still, that still rings in my head all the time. And then Bernie moved, and I got Phil. And Phil and I, you know, probably has been my sponsor for the longest, you know. And Phil taught me how to be gentle to myself. And to, you know, he would always tell me, you know, read page 88 and 89. And remember, what's our code? Love and tolerance is our code. And Phil taught me that. And then Phil had to lead us. You know. And I got Father Terry. And, you know, I wasn't with Terry a long time because he started to lose his memory. And plus he lived in L.A. But I spent, you know, many good hours. I asked Father Terry one time, I said, you know, in the Lord's Prayer, it says, you know, where it says, lead us not into temptation. What does that mean? And he said, tell God not to tempt you too much. Don't tempt me too much, you know. Be gentle with me, God. So I learned that from Father Terry. And then Mike O and I did a little thing for a few months, and that was good. And then for the past few years, Mr. 50-50 over there has been my sponsor, I think he wishes that I called him more often, but you know. But anyway, you know what I'm trying to tell you is, if you're new, don't think you got to do this alone. I mean, I've had 9 sponsors, you know. And you know what? If a sponsor doesn't work out for you, it's okay. I've had guys leave me, you know, many guys leave me, and it's okay. You know, if you're not getting what you need from me, go where you can get it. You know, and it's, you know, you're not hurting my feelings. You know, I'm not cut out for everybody. You know. There's so many, I mean, you saw how many years of sobriety we have in here. Well, our path is well worn. So there's, you know, you don't have to do it alone, and the guideposts sure as hell aren't that hard to see. You know, it's a well worn path, you know. And I just want to say, I love you people, because without you people, I wouldn't have made it. You know? Okay, I don't know you, but you still make a difference. You know, this room is filled with people, many of whom I do not know. You know, but you're important to me because you're here. You know, and you reinforce what this program is and what it means. So again, that's it for me. Thank you. And I can't wait to hear our speaker.
It now gives me great pleasure to introduce tonight's main speaker from San Leandro, the Bay Area, Angelina O.
Hi, family. My name is Angelina, and I am an alcoholic. I want to thank you for your service. Thank everybody here who participated in putting this together. And I want to thank the people who made it possible for me to share tonight. Thank you, Bruce, for making this for so long. I want to thank my family, Bloodline, and you know, spirit family that came tonight. They came all the way from the Bay Area. Woohoo! Man. I was not an alcoholic when I got here. I come from the School of Hard Knocks. You know, I was raised in a place that, you know, drinking was the thing to do. And I'm sorry I didn't set my timer enough. What time do I finish? Don't tell me whatever. Because I will keep talking until half the room is empty. So.
About 8:20, so I'll let you know when you're done in 10 minutes.
Okay, 8:20. You guys hold me to that, okay? Okay, let me talk real fast. So I wasn't an alcoholic when I got here. You know, I drank fine wines like Thunderbird. But they let me keep coming back. You know, I kept relapsing on various other substances. And I just kept drinking. I didn't see a problem with it. I got drunk, and I certainly didn't have a problem with it. But society was having a problem with it. My husband was having a problem with it. So he took me to my first meeting. And I'm going to tell you, instantly, I did not fit. And, you know, I don't feel this way today, but I'm going to be point blank honest with you guys. Okay? You can handle it, right? Yeah. The meeting was full of white people. Instantly, I did not fit. Then I didn't hear them talking about coming from the projects. I didn't hear them talking about the violence in the home, my home. I didn't hear them talking about being raised in poverty. I didn't hear them talking about, you know, child abuse, whether it was physical or sexual, whatever. I wasn't hearing it. I couldn't relate to what was going on. So I kept coming in and out, in and out, in and out. You guys, has anybody ever heard of Johnny Harris? Did I say his name right? Please forgive me. I heard him at an AA speaker meeting, and I don't know where it was, when it was, I couldn't tell you. So the last day that I drank, well, let me tell you, I went out, my last drink was on beer. I'm not a beer drinker, come on. I could not drink beer and get loaded. I had to drink like a case or whatever, you know, and I just couldn't, it wasn't doing anything for me. But my last run started with a Budweiser. And I'm going to tell you, I was off and running for 3 weeks. So that last day, my sister called me, and her and her husband had been in AA for a number of years. I couldn't tell you. I think 5 years or whatever it was. And they helped me do my very first inventory. Right there, I mean, I was drinking. I was putting all kinds of stuff into my body. And no matter what I put into my body, I wasn't getting drunk. I wasn't feeling nothing. It was like my whole body was numb. I know now that I was at the jumping off point. I couldn't live and I couldn't die. I couldn't get sober and I couldn't get drunk. What? And that's the day that my sister and brother-in-law called me. They had me do my very first inventory. They said to me, write out 5 things that made you feel less than human. Wow. That's deep. That was my very first inventory. Right now, 5 things that made me feel less than human. The very next day, I made it to a meeting, and I've been sober ever since. May 22nd, 85. And, you know, I remember this guy, he says, don't applaud, Chester. He would say, don't applaud, don't applaud. And my thing is you're not applauding for me. You're applauding because Alcoholics Anonymous works. I'm showing up, yeah, because I was asked to share tonight, to speak tonight. I'm showing up because I'm responsible for my recovery. I'm showing up because I'm responsible to carry the message, not the mess. And I want to show up to let the newcomers know that we can, no matter what. So I did this earlier today because I was afraid I was going to lose my place, which I've been doing a lot lately. I think because I'm getting older, I'm not sure. But I'm going to talk about some of the things in the Big Book, and I'm going to tell you that when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I could barely read or write. I was somewhat illiterate. I left home at about the age of 13 or 14, somewhere like that, and I've been on my own ever since. What was happening in my house was worse than what was happening out on the streets. So I ran out on the streets. I was just this skinny little kid. I know now I was just a skinny little kid. I didn't know it then. I did not believe that God loved me. I believed God loved everybody else. But I know today that God carried me through all of that because I am still alive. I survived all those insurmountable odds that was out there in the streets. I'm not going to go into detail because you guys can imagine what a little girl went through out there on the streets. I was raised in violence. I knew about violence. I was raised some neighborhood of twin brothers or whatever kind of brothers they are, one older, one younger, I don't know. Had their way with me several times. I don't know how many times. So what was happening to me, the violence, the deprivation that we were all going through. My mom and dad had 9 kids. My daddy was a violent drunk. My mom had a mental illness, and we got beat by both of them. I remember having a black eye one time by my mom and one time by my dad. So what was happening in my house and in my neighborhood was worse than being out there on the street, so I could handle it. I got 3 tools that helped me to survive out there. And I'm using the word survive. I learned how to depend on other people, being raised in the welfare system. I learned about violence, necessary. I've had to fight my way out of death-defying feats. And also, I learned about sex. So let me tell you, I don't live like that today. Thank you, God and Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't live that way today because you guys have shown me a whole new way to live. I have mercy today for all the stuff that I've done, all the injuries that I've caused in my life. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous have brought me to a whole nother level of living, of freedom. When I walked into the meeting tonight, when I walked into the room, Rachel, thank you for taking me by the hand and bringing me to my table. You know what? You know, guess what, you guys? This is something. It ceases to amaze me. I walked in this room with dignity and grace. I sleep in a bed today that has a mattress that sits on a box spring and it sits on a frame that's in a bedroom, and then there's the bathroom. It's in a house with my name on the deed. It's a far cry from waking up or coming to in shooting galleries in under the Alameda Street Bridge. Vacant cars in the Tenderloin. Man, I am so grateful to God and you people for blessing me with that dignity and grace. But wait a minute, you guys. It wasn't given to me for free. I had to work for it. You know this book that I was talking about? The Big Book study that my sponsor sent me to, it had a bunch of old men in that room. We had like, you know, back then everybody had nicknames, you know, Elevator Don, Barber Dennis, Navy Ray. And they not only taught me how to read this book, but along with my sponsor, my sponsor, that poor lady. Ooh, man, I was a handful. I knew everything about nothing. Man. So along with those men and my sponsor, they not only taught me how to read this book, but I'm going to tell you what, they taught me how to live. They introduced me and walked me into a whole new way of living. I didn't have to do the things that I used to do. Of course, I had to get sober first. So I'm going to talk about a few things in the doctor's opinion that have been profound for me. This is so amazing, this part in the doctor's opinion. In the very first page, it says, as a part of his rehabilitation, he commenced to present his conceptions to other alcoholics, impressing upon them that they must do likewise with their still others. You know what they're talking about there? They're talking about the very first 12-step calls. H and I. To be a part of something like that, a part of something bigger than myself. We're all a part of something bigger than ourselves. And you know what? After tonight, after I finish talking, guess what, you guys? We're all related. We're all related. I'm giving you a part of me. So that means you're all a part of me. That to me is amazing. That is incredible. Who could have ever thought that someone like me could be a part of something like this? Never. If you're new, oh my God, welcome to the family. You're in for a bumpy ride. Buckle up. So I learned a few things that I'm going to say tonight that my sponsor helped me to decipher. Frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. I know what that means. It means that I can't get nobody sober here. No matter how much I cry, no matter how much I beg you, it's not gonna work. I must decide somewhere inside of me, from the depths of the center of the core of my very being, has to admit that I have a disease of alcoholism. That once I put anything into my system, I lose all control over what happens next. I do not care about love in any form at all. Selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and frightened runs my life. It doesn't matter if I have children, grandchildren, a companion. It doesn't matter if people love me, if people drove all the way from the Bay Area or from down the street in Fresno. It doesn't matter who loves me or who I love. Once I put anything into my system, I lose all control over what happens next. I have a disease. So I love that line. And then the other one that I love is, it talks about altruistic movement. The altruistic movement. We're working for the benefit of others. How beautiful is that? That touches the realm of spirituality. We get out of self long enough to care about another human being, whether we know him or not, a newcomer, giving out our phone number, letting them know that we care, welcoming them to the family, getting out of ourself long enough to show that we care. Because you know what? People did that for me. Even when I didn't want them to care about me, they cared about me. That's incredible. That's amazing. I also want to talk about, I didn't mark it in my book, so I'm going to go off the cuff. Because I love saying this. Okay, prior to me getting with my companion, I could share any meeting anywhere and look around the room and say that I haven't had sex with anybody else. That blows me away. Because I'm not going to go into any stories because my companion's here. He knows where I came from. But because I applied the principles that people were sharing with me, that my sponsor shared with me, I got to start to develop a relationship with a power greater than myself. So when I had about 9 months, so May, June, July, August, however long it was, 9 months into this recovery, my husband at the time left, who got me into recovery. Oops, sorry. He got me into recovery. But he didn't see that he was a part of the problem too. But I'm not here to tell you about his story. So he got me into recovery. And then when I find it, you know, I was introduced to the rooms in 1981. I started making meetings in 1981. And of course, I didn't get sober until 85. So just before 9 months, he decided he didn't want to be married no more. So he left. He left before the miracle happened. So in the interim, I was working steps, and you know, by that time, I remember going into my sponsor's house. Oh, service, I need to say this. My sponsor taught me how to be in service. Not how to show up, but how to show up right. So I remember being at a business meeting one time, and oh my God, it was on. So I left my sponsor's house and I left the business meeting, went straight to my sponsor's house, and I was throwing up emotions. It was all about them and what they want to do and what they don't want to do, and they don't want to listen to me and blah, blah, blah. My sponsor was going, Then when I finished, she goes, okay. Now that you told me their inventory, what's yours? Oh my God. Can I have my water, please? Thank you. So back to my husband leaving. So he left and there I was. I had very little education. I had never really worked legally. And we had 3 kids. So I was faced with providing for these 3 kids. When he left, he left. He was an elevator construction person at the time, and they were one of the highest paid construction workers. So I was an at-home mom. Man, did I mess that one up. So he left us, and when he left, I mean, he left. No milk, no bread, no diapers, no new shoes for me. So there I was, you know, laying in the bed. Even before my eyes opened up, I had it going on. Man, I knew how to get some money. Because the PG&E was getting turned off. I had no food in the house, no car, no job, no nothing. And my head was going, oh, I know how to get some money. Oh, wait a minute, my sponsor said I can't do that anymore. You know, so I had it going on. The next thing I know, is I rolled out of bed. Remember, God loves everybody else but me? I rolled out of bed. And for the first time, other than going to church, I got on my knees. And I don't know what I said to God. And I don't know what he did for me that day or what he said to me. Because people, God talks to people. He wasn't talking to me. But I don't know if I got a job that day, a car that day, or even paid PG&E. I don't even know if I fed the kids that day. But I do know that I stayed sober through that. And I'm going to tell you, if I can get through that, I can get through anything. The book talks about no later vicissitude will shake my foundation. I know words like that today. What that means to me is no matter what happens, no matter what happens, everything's always going to be all right. I'm sorry, I don't know where that came from. So from that day to this day, God has been the most important thing in my life. So in We Agnostics, it says, God either is or he isn't. And I'm going to tell you, as I get chills running through my body right now, God is everything to me. He helped me feed those kids. He helped me get an education. He helped me get a job. He helped me do insurmountable odds for somebody like me. I became employable, you guys. Oh, check this one out. Because I learned about the traditions and the concepts, and you know, we don't hit people at business meetings. So I took that into my job. Every job. I can swear to you today that I haven't hit anybody on any job. So last year, I decided to retire from a job after 24 years and 10 months. I retired, you guys. Let me tell you, if that ain't a God thing, I don't know what is. So my kids are grown. One of my youngest daughter is out there. She was in the rooms for a little while, and she met somebody, okay? God is everything, but not to everybody. She got into a relationship, and they both ended up going out, and who knows where he is. I don't know where my daughter is. I don't know if I'm going to get a phone call tonight after I speak to say, you know, could you come identify her? I don't know. But I believe this, that no matter what happens, everything's going to be all right. God's got my back. I was blessed to be introduced to an inventory like I talked about. There's a fear prayer here. But first you got to know when you're feeling fearful, right? So that lady, my first sponsor, who walked me through my steps, who walked me through this book, who she said, okay, you got to go to a big book study because I was hard to read, you know, it was difficult to read. Go to a 12 and 12 study, go to a women's meeting, go to a speaker meeting. You know, she laid all this whole plan out for me. She said, every time you're in a meeting, sit on your hands, because man, I was hyper. It took me 3 years before I could talk at a meeting, and I still couldn't sit still. So she taught me how to sit still at a meeting. She taught me things like send the seven tradition can after the speaker, before the speaker, don't walk in front of the speaker. You know, just little respectful things like that. I didn't respect anybody or anything, not even myself. So today, I not only respect myself, but I respect the speakers. I respect the people who are in service, who give up their time, because I'm going to tell you, they're not paid workers. We all know here, oops, that's my alarm. Nobody here gets paid to be in service. I'm going to tell you, I could never pay back Alcoholics Anonymous what it's given to me. I have been in service before I even got sober. I remember our fellowship, we used to, you know, when we used to smoke and have ashtrays and stuff like that. Oh, look at this, Scott. The room is clear, huh? It just dawned on me. We used to clean ashtrays, and I used to, after I took the kids to school, because eventually, I used to get cars, like I used to save up $300, buy a car for $300. 3 months later, it would break down, but I knew everything was going to be all right. Now today, last year, when I retired, I bought a brand new car, first time ever. So I remember when I got my first job. And it was up in Oakland, and all these business women, because, you know, I check out other women, what they're wearing, and you know how ugly they are and stuff like that. So these women used to all look so, you know, and they're so fancy going to work, you know, and so pretty, and, you know, all dressed up. And there I was, ghetto. And I hated going to work there, but I showed up anyway because I had to feed my kids. And somebody took a chance on me. The lady said, do you know your alphabets? I said, yeah. She says, do you want to set up a filing system in the lawyer's office? Sure, okay. So I showed up and I set up the filing system. Right or wrong, they didn't say anything, so I guess it was right. My first paycheck, I went to the secondhand store down by my house, and I bought my very first coat ever in my whole life. $5. First time ever to buy my very own coat. I had been so dependent on everybody and everything to take care of me. For the first time in my life, I started taking care of me. Secondhand store, $5, who cares? I bought it. And now I'm invited into people's house and they trust me in their house. I don't steal nothing. Honglo. I've been in Glow and Robert's houses I don't know how many times, and I haven't stole nothing, I promise. So I'm about out of time, I think. He let me keep going. Did you guys know that there's how many prayers in the inventory, the sexual inventory? There are 4 prayers in the sexual inventory. That's why. I could walk in this room with dignity and grace. And I'm going to tell you, he's pretty happy about that. So in the chapter 6, I don't know if you guys know this, but if you're like me, a recycled miracle, I finally heard what they were saying in chapter 6, so that we don't have to relapse. Did you know that you don't have to relapse? I know that I don't have to relapse, because it tells me many times in this book. I'm not a big book dumper, don't get me wrong. I'm amazed that I not only know how to read it, but I know how to live it. So in this chapter 6, into action. What? Into action? bottom of the first page. The best reason first is if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. What? Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their life. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. I know that today. So guess what? I ain't got a drink today. Because I know if I got something going on, I need to do some journaling, first step work, second step work. So let me tell you, first step's acceptance, 2, 3, 6, 7, or 11. 2, 3, 6, 7, and 11 are phase steps, and they're progressive, just like the disease. 5, 6, 4, 5, and 10 are inventory steps, so that I can continually look at who I am and what I'm doing, and if I'm hurting anybody or if I'm hurting myself. 8 and 9 are restitution steps. I was told there's 4 types of restitutions to make. Did you guys know that? There's a kind you do right away. And it says, if you're sure that you're gonna stay sober, right? There's a kind that you put off. There's a kind that you do partial, and there's a kind that you don't do at all. Well, I made amends to my husband before I knew all that. That's why he became my ex-husband. So now I know today that I got to keep my face in the books and in the steps. Every time I work a step with a sponsor, we're doing some Q&As right now. That's powerful. I'm working the Q&As too. I'm working the steps too. You know, I may have a sponsor. Yes, I do have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I was in service to my home group. Guess what? My home group shut down during COVID. Almost at the end of COVID, I lost my home group of almost 41 years. So service, oh my God, I'm not in service right now. You know how scary that is to me, not to be in service? So I got this bright idea that I want to start a meeting, a step study, tradition study, and concept study. So I'm looking at this church, nobody wants us. Can you believe that? You guys, some of you know about the 3 crosses in Castro Valley, right? I even went there and they don't want us. Unless I do a Bible study with that. So, you know, I keep my face going forward, my feet one in front of the other, and I know this is gonna happen because I gotta get in service. And I know there's some, not just newcomers, but there's some old timers here that haven't worked the steps yet. Did you guys know that there was someone in, okay, I'm not gonna, should I go there? Okay, I'm just gonna say it. Someone had 42 years and relapsed. I don't want that to be me. I worked hard for everything I have. I worked hard to sit in my living room and watch the sunset. I worked hard to sit in my bedroom and watching the sunrise. I worked for that. I worked for that bed. I worked for that car. But more importantly, I worked for the peace that I feel every day. I know peace today. So recently, what month was that? That was June. June of last year, I started getting headaches. I wasn't going to talk about it, but it's just rolling. I started getting headaches. And oh my God, I was just like, oh, I can't, oh, they were bringing tears to my eyes. So for months, I've been put on different medications. I took massive over-the-counter drugs, not illegal. So I'm still getting them. Finally, I saw a neurologist this last week. Well, a week before that, I took myself off of everything. I said, I'm tired of taking all these pills. I can't, because my body was so pure, no chemicals. And all of a sudden, because of these headaches, I'm putting all this stuff into my body. And then I remembered people who relapse on pain medication. I made sure my doctor knows that I'm in recovery, that I don't want to take that chance. You know what? Alcoholics die from drug addiction. It's a denial, and I'm not in denial about that. I don't want to die from drug addiction. I know, you all know, it's no secret, come on. My story will tell you that I have a lot of mood-altering chemicals put in my system, a lot of illegal drugs put in my system, because I did what I had to do to survive. It's not a secret, I can't deny it. Like in the book, in the doctor's opinion, it talks about alcoholism and drug addiction. Put them together. Alcohol is a drug. Alcohol has, what's that, ethanol? Guess what, it's a drug, honey. Oh, I called you honey. Sorry. So I don't want to take that chance. So even though I told my doctors, so anyway, I stopped the drugs, and I just, my body was going through a lot of transition this last week. But look at me. So I saw the neurologist, he put me on this medication that's not mood altering. It's almost like an over-the-counter, stronger over-the-counter drug, medication, not drug, medication. And so so I'm able to be here tonight. I didn't have to cancel. And I'm so happy I didn't have to cancel. Because you guys probably would have never asked me back. I like this part in the into action. It talks, the rule is, and man, I tell you, I underlined it, circled it, highlighted it, different colors. The rule is, it's not a suggestion. It says, the rule is, we must be hard on ourselves. For people like me, who complicate things, procrastinate things, you know, make excuses, but you guys get the idea. So the old timer told me, he said, it's not about beating yourself up. It's about being painstaking and thorough from the very start. Wow, that's what that means. That is so freeing. So they're giving me the clock, the hatchet, or whatever you want to call it. Told you I could keep talking. But I'm going to end with this, that again, I want to thank everybody who made tonight possible for all of us, and thank my family, my blood family, for being here to support me, my companion, and thank you for that. And more importantly, I want to thank my higher power, Creator as I understand Him, for letting me be a human being today. Thank you.
All right. Wonderful. Wonderful.